Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Engadget podcast. I am Deputy Editor Sherlyn Low, and today I am joined by guest co-host Jess Condit. Hey, Jess.
Hello, happy to be here.
You will also hear our producer Ben Elman on the show. Ben,
I have some thoughts about social media.
Yes, we are going to talk about social media on this very special episode this week. This is basically our relaxing Thanksgiving week audio only episode of the podcast, which we normally live stream the recording of on the Engadget YouTube channel on Thursday mornings at about 10:45 a.m. Eastern. We're not doing that this week because, well, Devendra's out. It's Thanksgiving week, and it is Thanksgiving in the U.S., on the day after or the day of this episode going out. So we're not going to do that, but we still wanted to talk to you all. And hopefully it's a chill time. If you're enjoying the show, please make sure you subscribe on your podcast catcher of choice. Leave us a review on wherever you're getting this podcast. It helps people discover us. And then if you have any thoughts or feedback, send them to podcast@engadget.com. So yeah, this week, I mean, gosh, there's not a lot going on in November, really, but specifically this week in the U.S., it's slow as hell. We're like Black Friday all the time on the website, on the internet. But there was still some little pieces of news, and I thought we'd dive into just stuff that's been happening on social media related to the big social media like networks, but also our own thoughts and interactions, especially during this time when I think, you know, if the temperatures are coming down, people are getting a bit depressed as well. It's not really easy to see all of that online. I'll start with you, Jess. Like, have you noticed anything about like your use of social media lately, especially this year?
Yeah, actually, this year I changed my social media habits like pretty drastically. I didn't announce anything, you know, it was just kind of like a not quiet quitting, but like quiet chilling. I'm very much just like using everything less. I'm not posting on Instagram as often. I dropped Twitter a few years ago at this point because what a cesspool. But yeah, I'm on Threads and now I'm on Blue Sky. I'm sharing there because I know everyone's on Blue Sky, so I'm there too.
When we say everyone, who do we really mean, though? Because I think we usually mean like using something like Twitter or Blue Sky as kind of like a LinkedIn for media people.
That's why I wasn't there at first. I wasn't really interested in Blue Sky like before the post-election surge. And now it's like, oh, people are actually excited about this platform. They're using it for not just like LinkedIn situations. And so that's why I'm back there now, too. But yeah. Threads has been my like posting stories place.
Right. Yeah. I remember because we follow each other on Instagram, Jess. And I also have noticed like both of us have slowed down on our posting. I just assumed it was like better relationship with social media in general, or like I'm older now, so maybe I feel less of a need to get external validation. There's so many reasons. I will point out that you mentioned Threads and Blue Sky. I was super hype about Threads when it first like launch. I think it was like last year. I remember on the Engadget podcast episode about it, I was like, yeah, it's so fun, day one. And I didn't have that level of like energy for Blue Sky when I first signed up June 2023. And yet now it's like really rising up. This week, I think, or at some point this month, we saw the news that Blue Sky has hit 20 million users. And then this week we saw Threads was like, yeah, we had more than 35 million signups in November. Very like
just in November.
Just in November alone, whereas like Blue Sky lifetime achievement is 20 mil. So it's clear that Threads is still huge. But I think since that early day sort of vibe that I've been there, Threads, and I don't know how much time you spent on Threads, Jess, but like I don't have the same feelings. In fact, I feel like a lot of people are very angry on Threads nowadays.
Yeah, it didn't take long for it to turn a little like, oh, the algorithm's bad. Oh, everyone here is angry. You know, just kind of the stuff that you want to avoid on these platforms. It kind of took over Threads pretty quickly. I just post my stories and kind of walk away mm-hmm. on Threads. And that's me being healthy with my social media relationships. But yeah, Blue Sky for now is a little more optimistic and like community building feeling. And that's nice.
Do you think it'll last?
Yeah, I think I'm... What was that?
Do you think it'll last?
I don't know. But I don't need it to. Like, I think we've talked about our relationship with social media in general has changed. And maybe it is because we're older now. But, like, I don't know. I'm living a cool life, but I just don't really need to share every moment of it, you know? And I don't need to be online all the time. So so I use my social feeds strategically at this point, and I'm happy with that. So they can evolve and I'm fine.
There's a sense that like posting on social media in the moment also takes you out of the moment too. And, you know, that might be an aspect of like our maturing approach to social media, you know, us being generally in the same age band versus Zoomers who are always posting and talking about the psychological ramifications of that.
I don't know if people all do this. For me and for some other people I've noticed in the Gen Z sort of demographic, I tend to just wait till the end of the day when I'm done with my activities, then I post. So there's less of that like being removed from the moment for me. But there is still a bit of that like disconnection because you're still whipping out your phone during to capture whatever it is. And every event feels like a photo op, right? Like it's my cousin, whom I love dearly, is a whole like, I don't know, 15 years younger than me or something like that. So a different generation, and he's definitely Gen Z. And it's like, yeah, both him and I do the thing where we whip out our phones and take photos of the food before we eat them. And I think that's a both millennial and Gen Z thing to do. Yeah, the phone eats first. But then like the way we post afterwards is like, sometimes I forget to post and it doesn't really matter. But like for him, it's so curated. It's like there's a picture as the background. There's banners of the food pictures are cut out. It's very, very, there's more thought into it than I would. I'm very sporadic. So I mean, we wanted to talk a little bit about like just how do we think social media has affected all of us in general. And I feel as if like for those of us who are like making the conscious choice to like step back from it, we're tired of it. But then I don't know that the younger generation that's coming up to vote, that's coming up to become people with the social economic power, that they're that aware. I don't know. Ben, you're younger than me by a lot.
By a bit. And I would say, I know a lot of people have stepped away from social media or have been in the process of stepping away from social media basically since 2016, because that's when it felt like the noise level got turned way, way up, that all of a sudden somebody's, you know, uncle that never really like cared about politics or the world all that much was suddenly incessantly posting all sorts of crazy nonsense on Facebook, and exclusively Facebook, probably not anything but Facebook. I have seen that even more in the last few weeks because, oh wow, we're going to have another stream of horrible nonsense for the next few years as well. My main struggle with social media right now is how do I keep up with the sort of people that I want to keep up with, which are a lot of media people, without doing the sort of thirsty performative posting that I did on Twitter. Because I do want people to know that I am open for business. I definitely want to like talk with more folks about making podcasts. I want to kind of be a podfluencer a little bit, because I know that that makes me very visible in terms of, you know, someone reaching out with a cool possible project, or you know, reaching out with like an interesting story idea to pitch to one of the long form shows. But how do I do that without being annoying to both myself and others?
It's like a living resume.
Yes, exactly.
In that aspect, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Which is, I think, a pretty powerful use for social media. Like, I think that's really valid. And I mean, we've seen, I guess, like, yeah, 2016, the fall off started. But like 2020, we really saw the power of social media. Like the Black Lives Matter movement gained so much traction and so much organization on Twitter, of all platforms. You know, it's like we've seen that these things can be good for certain uses. And I think like, yeah, having a living resume is a great use for this. But it's like authenticity is at the core of it. If you're just kind of only posting what actually feels right and actually feels good for whatever you're trying to do, and not just posting to get engagement like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's pretty transparent when people do that. Right. So just kind of figure out what you want to do with it and then just do that authentically.
There's engagement bait. That's for sure. That's out there. I think that the Threads algorithm has like unfairly promoted a lot of that stuff, which makes it part of why it's so toxic nowadays. I did want to say that when you were talking about how to kind of keep up with people without a lot of this, performative stuff. I mean, I think Jess answered the question of like your end, how do you not come off performative? But I think the news this week that we saw was that Threads is testing a way to make your following feed the default, which will probably go a long way in eliminating a lot of that noise, hopefully. And you won't be exposed to as much of the other people's performative content on your feed, and you're able to keep up with just people you want to keep up with. And then the thing we were kind of talking about before was like, well, younger people are not so aware. So also news this week, we saw that TikTok is going to limit appearance-altering effects for people who are under 18. How they're going to age verify remains a question for me.
They'll have a system, but will it actually work?
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean,
because it's pretty easy to bypass that, right?
It has to be beefier than like put your birthday.
What's
in,
your birthday?
Please.
Yeah.
If there's anything I know about kids or teenagers, is that if there's a way, they'll find it to get around the things, you know?
I would. Right, exactly.
Like, I found my way.
I thought I was grown.
Girl, I mean, I didn't feel grown until very recently, but we'll get to it. But okay, so speaking of like the charlatans and influencers and engagement bait on things like Threads and hopefully not Blue Sky, we were just talking on the planning call for this show about like social media influencers making it to reality TV and or vice versa. And Jess, do you have any thoughts on your favorite TV franchise and the social media influencers?
Yes. We're in a golden era for Real Housewives.
Ooh.
This is like my Bravoverse is my region, Vanderpump, Real Housewives, all that stuff. And yeah, it's like you can tell when someone is cast on any of those shows and they're just there to be a social media influencer. You can tell when they're there as a social media person and they are like universally hated by the audience and their contracts don't last. They're not brought back. So it's like authenticity really is the key. If we're going to engage with these cool personalities that we see online, you want to feel that they're real. You want to feel like this person is actually bringing something unique to the table and they're not just playing a part, right? Like that's reality TV. Like it's scripted, sure, to an extent. But the people themselves can be authentic in those spaces. And that's what really resonates with people. Yeah. I think that's true for social media too.
I mean, and this goes back to the thing that we were all saying about social media being our living resumes, right? Like if you make it big on social media, then you have a greater chance at success anywhere else in your life. You can venture out into different business opportunities. Like, for example, Addison Rae is like a singer now, and I actually like some of her songs, which is great for her. And Ben, you were saying like, you know, if you want people to consider your podcasting skills, you need to be out there. And it's not enough that like maybe you're editing an NPR podcast or something. You need to kind of engage with other people. And I feel like...
And this is something that a lot of media folks have realized too. Like it's not enough to be well known as like, oh, you're a very good writer at, you know, Engadget or The Atlantic or The New York Times or something. You have to become your own cottage industry if you want a durable career in news now.
Yeah, everyone is a brand. And I was thinking like my partner is like trying to start up a thing. And I was like, they wanted to start an app. And I was like, bro, you need to start with social media. Why are you starting an app? Start from social media, get the popularity, then start your bit. Like, and it's so funny how it's all reversed now. It used to be you just start a business, you make good stuff, and then the marketing comes as part of the story. But now it's like the marketing is more and more like a huge part of it. And I don't know that it lends to very authentic interactions in the world.
Or if you're building the app or something, you need to like very much chronicle the building of the app and you know, try to get people excited about that. And then how much are you really focused on building the thing versus documenting building the thing?
No, I think it's interesting that there's a pipeline from create your brand and then make the product, you know, instead of make the product and that is the brand or the it follows, you know. It's like I want to do ASMR you know, with like video game swag. I have so much video game swag and it sounds great. I don't want to whisper anything. It's just tappy, tappy nails stuff. So like, I want to do that, but I've realized the people that follow me on like Threads and Instagram, they don't care about ASMR. They think those posts are creepy. So like, I need to start from scratch. And it probably will be totally separate from like my persona as a journalist, writer, or whatever. So it's like, yeah, just kind of realizing, oh yeah, these are, there are different markets, and they're, what social media and all these platforms allow us to do is to find our bubble and like just exist in that. And even if there's just like 5,000 people in that bubble, that's enough to like build a business off of. If all those people want to give you money each month or buy a product, you know, like that's enough to sustain. You don't need everyone to love everything you do. It's just like, find your people and do stuff with them, for them. Yeah.
And I'm sorry to say this, but it actually kind of pisses me off how much money companies are willing to spend on this sort of marketing. They'll send free, like half the money that goes towards paying for goods and services nowadays is going to sending free shit to like influencers that will promote their stuff on socials, or like, it is annoying to me that that's where they're choosing to spend their money. And it's therefore very like refreshing when I see companies avoid that altogether. It feels really challenging these days to focus on good work or making a good product and not having to like contend with the noise or getting yourself out there. It is, I think, though, going to be the way the system is built nowadays. Like, we've built these systems. We built them. Like, you can't say, like, I cannot absolve myself from the blame. I think I was part of the discussion of like, oh, Patreon started up and now there's only fans and there's so many ways to pay people directly. You've now fostered the environment where it's so much easier for people to just make money off of selling themselves, not in like selling their image or selling whatever it is that themselves constitutes. And I guess I think this is the way it is now. And I don't know if there's like room for both those things to exist at the same time. Can you be a good product and have that be enough? I don't know.
This may be risque for the podcast. Feel free to cut it. But I mean, there's the idea that all work is sex work. Everyone is selling their body. You know, in every job we do. And
yeah.
Right. I mean, I think that's pretty valid. And especially with these ideas where we're turning people into brands, or people are turning themselves into brands, or just using what they have within them to sell things online, or to create something, or to build a community. And I'm into that. You know, it really is about just finding your people though. Yeah, find your people, be authentic. That's kind of wisdom from an elder millennial on social media.
So speaking about finding your people and the like social media influencers on reality TV and everything, like we need to come back to the idea that since Twitter has gone the way of the dodo, sort of got very ideological, Musk is using it as his personal playground, that might have broken the consensus on microblogging, period. That's what everybody in the tech press is talking about. And so when you're talking about finding your people, you might also be talking about finding your specific correct place to post. Because you can't just put that stuff on Twitter and expect a subgroup of folks on that platform to find it. You might want to start posting on Threads. And that might be where more of those people are, versus Blue Sky, versus Mastodon, versus any of the other many, many things that have popped up to like take the place of Twitter, because it's like a whale fall in the ocean. Now there's this whole little ecosystem popping up inside the like ongoing death of this enormous website.
I think things have fundamentally changed. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've been spending more time on Discord. Like that's kind of my social, you know, it's not like public facing. These are all pretty closed communities that you can join and find. But like, that's enough for me. That's where I'm finding cool new stuff. It's where I'm talking to people. And like, I know Tumblr still exists to an extent, you know, like there are other weird little sites around and little apps. And yeah, you can just check it out. It doesn't have to be just Threads or Blue Sky, right? Like,
yeah,
we have other options.
Gone are the days when like people sold movie deals based on of like crazy Twitter threads anymore. Like the one person that told their story on a Twitter thread
was so good.
Has a movie now, right? Like a deal. But there is that's never going to happen again, I think, to Ben's point, right? There's, I think, going to be in the future permanent fragmentation of these like communal chatty spaces that are public because of what's happened to Twitter since it became X, I guess. And yeah, I guess I want to know what everyone else that's listening to this episode thinks. Where is your favorite space? Do you think we're just all going to go back to emailing people? just clearly found some space in Discord, maybe some Tumblr pages. I think I'm more of a passive person that's using Reddit a bit more. I always have been pretty heavy on like a reader on Reddit, but not so much like to engage with people. And yeah, Ben, if you ever find success through Blue Sky and become like a Emmy-winning producer, that'd be a happy day for all of us.
I keep on telling myself that I need to start posting to TikTok, but it is terrifying.
It is, because you put a lot more of yourself out there.
Yeah, but if you just believe in what you're saying and you're like, hey, this is valid, I think the kids will love it. The kids will like it.
Well, this is a good time to plug all of Engadget's socials. Let's go. Fully took control, I think. We turned off our little feed on Blue Sky, I think, in the recent past, maybe this week or last. And so at engadget.bsky.social, I believe, is where we are. And you will find a starter pack of all Engadget writers and editors on there as well. We are also at Engadget on Instagram, TikTok, X, Facebook, LinkedIn, if that's your vibe. So hit us up there. And if you prefer, you can always email us at podcast@engadget.com. All right, we're going to continue this chill little episode with a small gaming corner update with Jess and Ben, probably mostly talking during this section. Jess, tell us what's up.
All right. Yeah, I mean, I guess it is like a slow back half of November, but for me, in my world, we're ramping up to the Game Awards, which is in the beginning of December, so like December 12th. So right now, we have a few bits of news out of gaming. The one that I'm really interested in is Sony reportedly developing a new portable console. So immediately, I am like, oh, a new Vita. Fantastic. Let's go. And yeah, my love of the Vita is well documented. So Sony working on something new is cool. And this is different than the Portal, which I also like, and we can talk about that as well. There's a little news around Portal. But yeah, sounds like Sony's diving more into handheld kind of stuff. And that's really exciting for me. I don't know, Ben, are you a Vita boy?
No, I think I've seen like a few people playing it, you know, over the years, on the subway, because I've lived in New York City for that long. When you talk about game streaming, it might be way better on a Vita-similar device now than it was before, because the Vita came out in, what, like 2011, 2012? Broadband has gotten so much better in the US since then.
Cloud gaming is actually possible nowadays, and it truly wasn't before. So it was like a matter of downloading games and playing them, and that was totally fine with me. I still very much believe in that system. But what Sony, so like with the Portal, Sony has the PlayStation Portal, and this is a handheld device that at first streamed games from your PlayStation 5 console to the device, and you could play your games in your house, kind of, you know, handheld version. But now Sony has rolled out cloud streaming. They're testing cloud streaming on the Portal, where you can just boot up a game and play it from the cloud without the PS5 involved at all. And this is like, it actually works, by the way. So I have a Portal, I've been testing cloud streaming, and it's so smooth. I forget that I'm streaming anything. I forget that I'm playing from the cloud. I played Animal Well for like an hour or two, and I was like, damn, this is great. So yeah, it's like, we're actually at a place where cloud networks are strong enough, like we have broadband strong enough, Wi-Fi strong enough to actually make these things possible. And these are like dreams that have been laid out for video game fans for decades, right? Like we've been dreaming of this day. So making a handheld right now that has cloud streaming, can also download games, makes so much sense. And I have to say, it's pretty shocking that Sony is leading this charge rather than Microsoft. This is like Sony is using Microsoft's Azure cloud technology to stream its games. Like they have a partnership. Microsoft is the person in charge of cloud gaming if they want to be. But in my experience, PlayStation streaming has been more stable than Xboxes, and or at least as stable. And they're doing more with that in terms of like handhelds and stuff. Apparently, Microsoft is also apparently working on a handheld console or controller kind of thing. We'll see. And I think that's smart of like anyone on the Xbox team. They should be doing handheld stuff. I don't think like consoles are Xbox's future. And I think they know that. So, but the fact that Sony is like kind of outpacing Microsoft in terms of cloud play, shocking. Never did not think that this would be the outcome.
Can I just point out that when I was reading Devendra's piece about, you know, trying out cloud gaming on the PS Portal, I mean, he still mentioned that like this, basically he said this cloud streaming feature makes me hate this PS Portal a bit less. And I was like, cool. The way the PS Portal existed before was a bit questionable, right? It's just like for you to stream games from the PS5 in your living room, but like when you're in your bedroom or something like that. And now it seems a lot more useful, but it's still not obviously that like take anywhere you go kind of console we're thinking, right? 5G is not in the equation for cloud streaming or gaming just yet.
Yeah, I feel like we're still building out cloud gaming. We're still building out this network and what we can do with it. And I don't think, like, I can't really play Overwatch on the cloud, on the portal. Like, that doesn't really work, right? The connection. So, like, competitive online games, not quite ready for that. But I think we're getting there, right? And this is closer than we've ever been, and it actually feels viable. Like, I know Google Stadia shut down, but Amazon still has Luna. Like, Luna is still a thing, and Amazon's still promoting it, and they're just cloud gaming over there. Yeah, it's a thing.
It's only going to bring up Stadia too. I was going to be like, do you think Google might resurrect Stadia? But I don't know. We'll see.
For a year and then drop it again? Sure.
Again.
So, Jess, we've talked a lot about various companies making people buy and beta test their products. Like most recently, I think it was foldables of all sorts. Do you think the PlayStation Portal is in that realm of like making people buy a beta product or what?
So I did not hate the Portal as much as Devendra, right? Like his review of it was pretty shocking to me because I saw a lot of value in it. Like in my house, it makes sense to have a second screen that can play a PlayStation game while someone else uses the main TV. Like it made sense for like for my house. So that's, I didn't really agree with his premise and yeah. his use of it. And my Wi-Fi was capable of handling it. So
were you experiencing the same thing he was when he was trying to fire up a local network game? So before the cloud streaming came on, and he would have to like wait so long for the game to boot up from the console itself, the portal itself, that he would have to walk all the way back to his living room and like start it from there or something like that.
No, I never had that issue. It was pretty seamless, pretty straightforward. But I have a very small house. Like this is like less than 1,000 square feet. So the Wi-Fi is strong wherever you go.
Yeah.
Which
I think,
is nice.
I think that's part of it. Yeah. I think that's part of the reason we have such different experiences is that like his place may be a bit bigger. He is, after all, I think like a multi-room house with his like much bigger family than yours, I think so.
Right. And it's kind of like the PS5 Pro is not for everyone. The Portal, not for everyone. I do feel a little bit like a guinea pig, but it's a really solid piece of hardware, right? Like it doesn't feel cheap. It's about as like wide as a Steam Deck, but it's lighter because it has some holes, some air where the handles and the screen don't touch. And it feels really nice to hold. I've pretty much no complaints. Like if I'm a guinea pig, this is fine. You know, keep it coming.
Okay, so one last note on PlayStation this week that we were going to talk about is we saw the news that Shuhei Yoshida is leaving PlayStation. Jess, what does this mean to you?
This is a little heartbreaking. It's a little sad because Shuhei has been just like a champion of indie games and smaller developers and really giving time to innovation in gaming. This isn't the end of an era. I mean, PlayStation has changed a lot, even in Yoshida's tenure. He's been there like 30 years. So we've seen Sony like lead the console wars and really give it to Xbox at E3 and then lead the indie charge. And then they kind of like lost their footing and we weren't seeing a lot of innovation. They lost their sense of like indie stuff. But he was a champion always of indie games. And that's like, that's my heart and soul when it comes to gaming. So I have a lot of respect for him. I'm interested to see if he just kind of maybe leans into indie stuff post PlayStation.
And to be clear for anyone that, like me, might not know, so Yoshida is Sony Interactive's head of Indies Initiative, which is a position that, according to the article I'm reading on Engadget.com, is a position he got in 2019. So for him,
he was president of PlayStation Studios. Like, he was president of, like, the software and, like, you know, games coming in. So he did indie stuff within that as a real focus. Sean Layden as well, when he left, things changed. You know, it's like there were a few people that can really change the direction of these huge companies. And Yoshida was one of those. Yeah.
And Kotaku noted that this is like coming up on the PlayStation's 30th anniversary on December 3rd, which is really like quite a, like a significant time for us to be talking about this. Like 30th anniversary and 30 years is about at least how long he's been at PlayStation. So that's a very long tenure. And then also one quick thing I wanted to point out is that he did say he intends to remain in the industry. So like, what else might he do that you might be interested in, you know?
Well, you know, I can actually tell a little story, a little behind the scenes tea.
I love it.
Yeah, I guess this does tie in. At Summer Game Fest, I was talking with Devolver president Nigel, and we were just talking in the back of their tent, and Yoshida walked in and like had a meeting next. And I was like, interesting to see you here. Interesting that you're just kind of meeting up and talking with Devolver of all people. It makes a lot of sense, right? They've always been close. Like there's a tight knit bond between Yoshida and the indie community. And Devolver is part of that. So I would not be surprised if he just kind of kept supporting smaller gaming studios or, you know, endeavors.
Yeah. We also saw a bit of news from Devolver this week, but it's about like their delayed Game Award things, right, Jess?
Oh, yeah. Actually, as we're talking, Devolver is having its delayed award or delayed games showcase. So they talk about all the stuff that's coming out. So we may have some news from that. I haven't seen.
Oops. Keep an eye on Engadget.com. You've also been playing a game recently, Jess. Tell me all about Avowed. Should I play it?
Okay, so this, now we're leaving Sony land. We're going to Microsoft land. Avowed is the new fantasy action RPG from Obsidian. And this is a studio that Microsoft now owns. Outer Worlds and Pillars of Eternity. These are their big ones. No, yeah.
No, none of them and Fallout ring New a Vegas. Bell to me.
Fallout New Vegas, maybe. No. I'm trying to get you. I know. But they're a great studio. Like they're a good storytelling studio. They really know how to build a world, and the people there care. Like the developers there really care about their franchises. So Avowed is like the I don't know. There's a big era of action RPGs coming next year. Fantasy RPGs are having a huge time right now. Dragon Age: The Veilguard just came out. We have Avowed. We have Fable. There's a few others coming out next
year. There's another Fable game coming out?
Yeah, it's like a reboot, right?
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, so, now I need to check that out.
So Xbox especially is going to be like dripping in RPGs. Avowed is like awesome. I played it for 2 hours. There was a preview. I got to play it at home because the first time I played it was at an event for Gamescom earlier this summer. And it was fine, but I couldn't really get into it. You know, RPG, you need some time to dig in and build your character. So I got to do that. I got to actually like create a character, and it's this world where you have like fungus on your face because you're a godlike, and you're going out into the lands to discover why this evil blight is infesting everything. And it's lovely. It looks great. It plays great. The action was really smooth. The dialogue was great. There were a lot of different trees to follow that felt really unique for each character. I'm really excited for Avowed. So you can read my preview. There's more there. But bottom line, this looks really good.
And it's, you said Microsoft, so Xbox, I'm assuming only.
Yeah, I believe it's Xbox. It'll be PC as well. But I haven't heard anything about PlayStation or anything. Yeah.
Right, so maybe I'll play it on PC then. So speaking of, by the way, like it being a slow news week in general, I'm surprised though that we still saw some new gadgets announced this week, and I'm going to quickly just breeze through some of them. As always, you can get all the details on Engadget.com. DJI honestly made a lot of products this year, and some of them were really well received, like the Neo, which is like a $200 drone. this week we saw the news about the announcement of the Mic Mini, which is a wireless microphone that you can actually just attach to your iPhone. This will probably help a lot of people who create video content on their phones get much better audio. I know that Steve Dent on our team, who's reviewed a lot of DJI and, you know, drone and camera content for products for us, seems to really like it. The audio can be transmitted up to 400 meters, and it should provide like stable audio, even if there's a lot of like Bluetooth signals and Wi-Fi around, because DJI says that there's some like anti-interference tech in here. Obviously, we're going to have to test it out to see if it's really, you know, going to live up to that claim, but I'm intrigued myself, just especially because Steve has been so hype about it. I know.
Moving the tiny microphones on TikTok are also like all the rage. You cannot scroll for, you know, longer than a couple of minutes before you see someone talking into either something that, you know, connects to the USB-C or Lightning port on a phone, or, you know, one of these like wireless DJI sort of things. So
yeah,
it makes sense that DJI is like going hard into this.
We are, yeah. So we,
like CES, that might be
exactly
us.
Exactly. Jess, I know you are like, you've been probably like used before one of our DJI Osmo like kits that we sometimes shoot with nowadays in the Engadget team. So yeah, CES, we're going to see a lot more of that stuff. And that will be probably helpful for us.
I think so. And honestly, it just makes me feel like a K-pop star, because that's my only reference point is just K-pop interviews where they're holding those little mics and it's so cute.
Yes.
So
I will be your fan cam.
I'll be yours. Let's go.
Yes, I love it.
Our CES videos are going to be wild, everyone.
Oh my God. I can't wait. It's going to be amazing. All right, I'm going to power through a couple more headlines, which is Bang & Olufsen also this week revealed its latest premium earbuds. These are the $500 Beoplay 11. Apparently, it's the most advanced active noise cancellation earbuds to date, according to the company. I would just say the most advanced for Bang & Olufsen. Yeah, $500 for B&O earbuds is a lot to me, but I will wait till we get in some review units. The FTC warned this week as well that in a report it published, the Federal Trade Commission found that 89% of connected devices don't actually receive software support for very long. The review found that in 11% of product sites that shares the information on how long devices will be supported, the 11% of these product sites had like ambiguous language. It had inconsistencies about where the dates were displayed. They did a lot of research just to find what information about support dates is available and just couldn't really find answers for 67% of the devices studied. And like, it, I mean, I don't know about you guys. I have a tiny rant here because I was just talking about, I had a personal situation where like my internet service provider sent me a new router, which I had to set up because I rent a router, I guess. And like just wanting to switch over my entire smart home infrastructure over to a new SSID, which I just wanted to do because I just wanted to set up a new one and be done. I could not like easily. And so like I had to set up two old networks with the old name, and that's how it worked. But then in the process, you find out like some of these devices in your home don't work anymore, or like some of these devices that I received for free, like, I don't know, by attending some corporate event or whatever, was like no longer working. Frequently, these are like little Google Home Mini thingies, like the $50 or $35 ones, and they like just, they're still in the box. They don't work anymore, and it's so embarrassing if I like try to give it to my parents or whatever, and then like they take it out of the box and it's just not working, and it's only 2 years old. It is crazy to me that devices don't last as long as you think they do, and I don't know if this is like just a me problem or is this something like you maybe have experienced, Jess.
I mean, that's definitely a thing. I feel like there are so many different like photo frames and things, you know, things that you would just buy someone, and then you truly don't know if in a year it's going to be supported or if the app's not going to work anymore. You know, you just, it's annoying, and it should be disclosed.
I Right. And then, but the thing is, like, I feel like companies like Google or whoever else makes hardware won't disclose this because it's like, number one, they don't even know, right? Like, for Google, it's like the next year it could be in the graveyard. Apple, you know, whenever they stop supporting some kind of iOS update, you're probably not going to be able to use it anymore. But I don't know. I don't know that it's an easy, like, a problem with an easy solution. But I just thought it was worth bringing up this week since the Federal Trade Commission had that study, which gives us a bit more hard data.
The really annoying thing about this is all the components work too. You're bricking something that otherwise works, something that maybe like your less tech savvy relatives might still want to use, like a connected photo frame or something like that. And it just sucks that you have to put this in a landfill because some company went under and the app is no longer supported.
Right. I think this is like more of that whole thing that we said of how the world's fundamentally changed and like social media has made enterprise and business one way. And this is another thing that I don't know that we, again, can fix necessarily, but it's maybe something we have to like realize is the way the world works now. I really hope not, but
yeah, it ties into e-waste. You know, it ties mm-hmm. into these larger issues that are issues for mm-hmm. the planet and, you know, in a physical space, these are issues. So yeah, I think we can do better, right?
Well, this has been an episode where we look at little pieces of news and tie them to bigger trends and make connections in everything we see because such is the world. We are all interconnected and interdependent. Hey, speaking of we're all interconnected and interdependent, are you working on anything this week, Jess? This is the working on section of the podcast.
Yeah, I mean, Game Awards. It's all Game Awards Ooh. Prep. I've seen a few briefings and we're getting some news in. It's going to be a fun show. So December 12th, join us. And I'll have a bunch of like stories about the ecosystem, you know, consoles and where we are, where Sony is, where Microsoft is. So be on the lookout. December is a big month for gaming.
I love that for us. I pray for you that you get some, not you don't get overworked. That's all I'm saying. For me, working on hopefully nothing. the rest of the nice, team is nice. Working. I know. The rest of the team is working very hard on, you know, all the Black Friday tech and gift, you know, guides type things that you will probably see a lot of on our website. I mean, this is kind of what is going on in the world right now. And so that's how we're covering it. But if you ever do get tired of being inundated with shopping picks or I guess live, we have some pop culture picks for you. Jess, I think you mentioned this already earlier in the show, but what are you watching or doing?
Yeah, we talked about mine. So it's a renaissance of Bravo shows right now. Real Housewives of Salt Lake City is off the charts good. So delicious. The community theater of Housewives. They're just delusional people being delusional on camera. It's fabulous. And then, yeah, like there are other Real Housewives shows that are also doing great right now. The new Real Housewives of New York, don't bother with it, but the rest of them doing pretty good. Potomac is also having a good season.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would think I would be interested in the New York one, actually, but so I guess not, huh?
The old New York, any of the old seasons of Housewives of New York are gold. Start from the beginning. You can't go wrong. These people are ridiculous. And like the joy of Housewives is to laugh at rich people. Like this is why I like watching it. And they take themselves so seriously.
Yes.
It's hilarious. So yeah, that's what I do. But the new rebooted Roni of New York is not good. Oh, so don't bother with the reboot, but the old stuff is fabulous.
All right, good to know. I watch a different kind of reality TV, and we've talked about this in our own like conversations, but I do enjoy watching Love is Blind or all the dating reality shows, and then I love watching YouTube therapists talk about that sort of behavior. Yeah. I think you and I watch reality TV for the same reason, which is not that we want to keep up with people, but we love to like make fun of the people or like learn from bad behaviors and what not to do, I guess. However, my pick for everyone else this week is not a reality TV show. It is Smile 2, the sequel to the original horror movie Smile. And everybody says this is one of those rare times, I think, where the sequel is actually much better than the original. Jess, you watched this too, right? Did you like it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's way better than the original. Like, Smile 2 shocked me with how good it was. So, yeah, highly recommended.
It's about this pop star who has a sort of troubled past with, like, substance abuse and that sort of stuff, and is haunted by this demon that manifests as people smiling creepily at her. And I never knew. I think it's a bit illogical to think that someone smiling at you can be creepy, but it was ridiculously creepy, and I really liked that about the movie. I also like the commentary on, like, fame and, like, similar to those topics you were talking about, right? Social media and fame, and also why do people expect certain behaviors from famous people? Why do you think they owe you a signature? Why do they owe you their time and attention? I don't think anyone owes anyone anything, really, but here we are. So yeah, Smile 2. I think that's available on Hulu.
Nice. I saw it in theaters, old school.
Ooh, I love that.
I know, right?
It's even creepier.
It was. Yeah, it was good.
That's it for the episode this week. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. This podcast is produced by Ben Elman. Jess, where can people find you online?
Oh, yeah. I guess that's still a thing. I am on Instagram. I am on Threads. Yay. Those are Jess L. Condit. And I'm on Blue Sky. All the Blue Sky stuff, and then Jess L. Condit, I think. I'm not even sure.
I think it's at jesslcondit.bsky.social, but you can also go check it out on the Engadget one. If you need me, I am also on Blue Sky. I am at Sherlyn, Cherlynn, at .bsky.social. Gosh, you got to learn new ways to say these things. I am not going to look at X a lot anymore, but you can find me also just by emailing Cherlyn at engadget.com. If you like this show, or if you have any feedback, you can email them to us at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review on wherever you're listening, and subscribe, because you don't want to miss a thing.